Woody Shaw on trumpet leading the Woody Shaw quintet on this particular song called That Dare. There was a counter to this called This Here. This is called That Dare in response. Woody Shaw, as I said, is on trumpet. Kirk Lightsey's on piano. Steve Torrey on trombone. Ray Drummond on bass. And Carl Allen on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And there's no news to report except that the world continues to go mad. And we just have to figure out how to navigate it so that it doesn't catch us up in its web of madness. Well, a very interesting thing happened yesterday in court in Washington as the Democrats launched their first day of an impeachment inquiry. And, you know, I was surprised that it didn't get much more coverage than it did. I was surprised about that. It was a very low-key thing. But, in fact, there were fireworks yesterday in court. The Judiciary Committee, headed by Gerald Nadler, congressman from New York, began formal proceedings into possible impeachment of Donald Trump. And they had as their first witness Corey Lewandowski, who was a Trump associate. In fact, Trump had hired him to run his presidential campaign. And he did a good job, an excellent job. He got Trump, helped to get Trump elected. And Trump kept him on in various consultative capacities, but still as his political mechanic. Whatever needed to be done, Corey Lewandowski was the guy who they looked to implement Trump's desires and to advise him on what he thought was the next best move in maintaining, since he had already been elected to the White House, but to keep him there. Okay, so they're asking questions of certain witnesses, and Lewandowski was tagged as a major witness to be questioned, because he knew so much. He was an inside man. And so they started with him. And it was predicted it would be a very long day with him, because he allegedly knew so many things about the workings of the Trump machine. And they had so many different areas to explore. So it was expected from the beginning that it was going to be a long day. What was also expected was that he would give up nothing, certainly nothing useful. He was not really going, I mean, nobody would expect him to come before this committee and basically answer questions in such a way that he would impugn Trump or implicate even himself. So what he decided that he would do, he would take the tactic of trying to look like he wanted to cooperate with the committee. But of course, he has no desire to cooperate with the committee. He has no respect for the committee. He doesn't care about the committee. So he decided that he would give them non-answers. For as long as they asked him questions, he would give non-answers. It would look like he's answering the questions, but you have to be crazy to believe that he was actually addressing the questions that were directed at him, and B, that he was telling the absolute truth. None of that should have been expected. And so it was a long day. Lawyers kept pressing. They kept turning the questions this way and that way. And they started going for nuanced questions. You know, not, you know, were you in the park yesterday kind of questions. But when you were in the park yesterday, what did you observe? Which is a roundabout way of establishing that the person was in the park, you see? So there was a lot of that. And both sides knew that that was the game. For Lewandowski, there was no way that he meant to be caught, even in the smallest way, connected to Trump. Because that means automatically they could press him further, since they would have been successful, let's say, in establishing a link between Lewandowski and Trump, and therefore Lewandowski is a witness with a special witness with a special story to tell. And they were going to press and press and press until they got the story. It went on for hours, by some estimates, almost 5 hours of this. And nothing. There was nothing to show. This witness had lobbied back to them non-answers to the questions they were desperately looking for answers from. And they were just about to give up and call it quits, because it was late in the day, almost closing time, right? And lo and behold, there was a change in tactic. The two lawyers, Barry Burke and Norman Eisen — Burke is a criminal defense attorney hired by the committee's Democrats, and Norman Eisen, a former ethics lawyer who worked in the Obama administration — decided to change their tactics. Now, mind you, this is going into 6 o'clock, and all day they've been at it, hammering and badgering and putting Lewandowski through all kinds of permutations to see if he would give up something, and he didn't. So they decided to take a different tact, and that was not straight ahead questions, but nuanced questions. Questions that would bring him to an answer that would actually implicate him in something or another, whatever it is they wanted to extract from him. And they decided to ask questions based on not the straight ahead documents before them, and, you know, on page 66 you said this and on page 75 you said that. That was not working. But instead, what they decided to do was to use his public interviews and what he actually said in those interviews. Because he can't deny that he was there, that he was asked these questions, and he gave these answers, which is quite different from what they were experiencing at the moment, where he basically just blockaded himself against any possibility that they would implicate him in anything. And that's where they struck gold. They found ways to connect Lewandowski to Trump and to other things related to the question of how much he knew of Trump's organization and so forth, by referring to published interviews in which Lewandowski waxed philosophic and copiously on matters that they were trying to get to in direct questioning, but couldn't. They weren't succeeding at all. And a little crack opened up. And water started to seep through the crack. And then the crack weakened the wall behind which Lewandowski was hiding all day and doing a great job of it. Lewandowski, by that time, had survived a blistering series of questions with the basic answer that he cannot address these questions because he was ordered not to address these questions, and ordered by the court, and ordered by the Trump administration. And so he was, well, he wants to cooperate. This is the tone that he took that frustrated the heck out of people. Look, I want to help you out. I want to talk to you. I want to let you know what I know, but I can't do that because, you see, I have these court papers that officially prevent me from saying anything. But the lawyers, when they started to implement the new tactics, said, but what we are asking you about, you have already put on the record. Here you are talking to ABC News. Here you are talking to MSNBC. Here you are talking to the New York Times or the Washington Post. And you're addressing the questions. You have answered these questions before. So we just want you to repeat yourself. Repeat the answers to these questions, which are already on the record. And give us the opportunity to again appreciate what you had said months ago. You are on the record. Here's your face. Here's the microphone in your face. So how could you now say that you can't address these questions? It wasn't a problem before, and you were able to wax philosophic, you were able to give details, you were able to answer these questions comprehensively. We just want you to repeat that. And so, Lewandowski, he had nowhere to go. And the snarky Mr. Lewandowski just kind of broke down. They had their man. Now, that's great courtroom drama. To me, you live for that kind of thing, that moment. But it's very easy to dismiss because it doesn't, you know, it's not coming with bells and whistles and so forth, but it was a decisive moment. And there was no way that Lewandowski was prepared for that. He was not prepared to see himself providing the information he was again asked to provide. except at this time he was hiding behind the wall, a protective shield, if you will, saying that I would love to help you. I want to help you, but I am ordered not to help you by engaging in any kind of discussion with you. So that was a major accomplishment. It looked so simple, it looked so easy, it looked almost inconsequential, but it was a big deal. And that shows how important it is to pay attention to the details. They would have missed it completely. And therefore, they would have missed an opportunity to take on a key witness in a case that is one of the, is going to be one of the cases for the books. Is the seminal case now, legal challenge against Donald Trump. And the effort to throw him out of office. There you go. Now, I don't know where things are going to go from here, but the most important thing is they got their man, the guy who is the pivotal connector of all the things that they intend to prove and charge and fight over. Lewandowski is a key, if not the key person, to connect all these dots. And on the first day, they disabled him. Just by paying attention to the details. That, to me, was an excellent, excellent example of how lawyers, if they're skilled and if they're paying attention, they can find hope where there appears to be no hope. There you go. Of course, you know that that tactic works for the other side as well. People are called to the stand and they disavow all kinds of things. And then they just produce photographs, or they produced a film, or they produced a voiced interview, and it's all over. But we don't know if it's all over. We know that this now takes on an entirely different tone. This is not an incidental process. It is very serious, and the Democrats are absolutely engaged. And they know what their mission is, and they're going after it. This is not playing footsie. They're done with that. And the president has no reason to rest easy, because they are using every tool in their toolkit to bring him down. That was a highlight, and it was just the first day. So imagine they're now very much emboldened by hitting their stride, if you will, very early in the game from day one. Now, where the case goes in terms of the investigation, we don't know. But we know that on day one, they bagged one of the top assets they were after, and that is Corey Lewandowski. Now, this may not mean very much to people out there, because it's really not getting that kind of press attention, and I'm a bit puzzled by that. because the aim here is to make it appear that this isn't going anywhere. I'm talking about the choreography behind the case is to make the public dismiss it as being incidental. It's, you know, it's nothing big. It is big. It is the big thing. And by playing it down, they're hoping that the public also plays it down. The public also won't be interested. They had made it so that from the very beginning, the public would have been hyped about a central point that they wanted to make. This was just an aggravation. This was nothing that was going to go anywhere. The lawyers don't have the goods, as it were. And it was going to be a flash in the pan, but essentially it would not result in any body blows to President Trump. You may have one witness or another witness, you know, few and far between, but this was smack on. This was big time. And yet it wasn't covered like that. It was covered like, well, it's the first day, and it wasn't getting very much play. Not even after it became so clear that they snagged Lewandowski. He can't undo his testimony. He can't unsay the things that he had already said on the record. He can't hide behind these fictitious protections he allegedly has that say that he is not allowed to speak about his service to Trump. That's all done. That's finished. Those arguments no longer apply. So he was dispatched, and they will have him singing. He is now an asset. He's been converted to an asset. He's a liability now for Trump. He's an asset to the other side. So I got a kick out of that yesterday. And still I worried about the fact that with such drama, I didn't look like drama. You know, it's not one of those things that you have on television where the intrepid lawyer pulls a big surprise move. This was straight ahead, unadorned lawyering. And they almost ran out of time because it was getting dark outside. And they hadn't gotten to the point they wanted to get to. And the point they wanted to get to was to nail Lewandowski and then use him to connect very important dots. And without Lewandowski being able to do that, or without the lawyers being able to connect Lewandowski to these various things that will come up as a trial and as the hearing continues, it's lost. But they did a marvelous job, and I was having quite a time saying, you know, you have the you know, you've seen those movies where everything is going against the lawyer who's supposed to win, to score victory, and everything is against him. And then by some fluke, he catches his breath again, and he looks at the case and becomes enlightened. that there's something else he has to do. Doesn't know what quite yet, but then it comes. The thought comes. And he saves the day with simple, logical thinking. And that's why I believe so strongly in thinking. And I encourage you to think all the time. Never mind what's going on out there. It will be there anyway. The question is, where are you going to poke the holes? Where are you going to get your leverage? And it almost always is the case that it comes out of finding a quiet moment where you can think. And then the answer comes. There you go. So yesterday was a victory for all schlubs of the world who are overwhelmed in a situation and practically are a hair's breadth away from giving up or conceding to themselves that it's not going right. But if you have a little time to collect your thoughts, sit and collect your thoughts, things like this really do happen. And it makes such a difference when you pay attention, because your thoughts are a way of instructing you. So they were very, very lucky yesterday. Where the case goes from now, I don't know. I really don't know. But it's important to just stop for a minute and say, all right, you got a break. You got a break. Let's see what you do with it. I'll take a break here at 888-874-4888. I have a lot to talk about, but I know I'm not going to get through it. So I'll ask you to register if you've been following this impeachment process. Where do you think it's going, and what do you hope will happen? Right after this. I do, in a way. Donald Trump's reaction now, and it's like he's in free fall. He has ratcheted up the sanctions he had placed before, and he's kind of doubled down on sanctions and saying that, you will feel my wrath. You will feel my wrath. Although he admits, and everybody is admitting now, they don't have any hard evidence to say who specifically conducted the massive bombing of Saudi Arabia's oil fields on September the 14th. They have inklings. They have suspicions. They have ideas. They have thoughts, no evidence. But they are proceeding as if those ideas that they have, those inklings, are in fact facts and evidence. This is a very serious mistake. And the United States and no other nation should be caught in a scenario where they look like they have made up their minds, no matter what the evidence might show. I mean, initially they just said it as if it were fact, as if nothing could contradict what they are saying, as if they had done their own investigations and quickly were able to surmise that the bombings were done by X group or Y group. I'm not going to say it because that would add legitimacy to what they claim. But right off the bat, I said, they can't identify very crucial things. Where did the attack originate? What weapons were used? How are you so sure that these were the weapons used, and you trace these weapons back to the people that you are accusing? How could you proceed as if you are a one-man judge and jury? And you have already indicated to all that you are, quote, locked and loaded, unquote, for war. You can't talk this way. Well, of course, he did, so he can talk this way. You can't put that out there and expect that people wouldn't be ruffled because you, in effect, have declared your intention to go to war. Now, that continues to have major ripple effects. And even now, you are saying you have no proof, no conclusive proof. You have not gone before any world body. You have not consulted people in the region, and as if you have to. In fact, we don't even know why the United States is taking this leadership role. What then is the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia? Because you're riding shotgun, as they say, to protect Saudi Arabia from this enemy that bombed its oil fields. And the oil fields produce 5% of the oil used globally. That was a big hit. So we haven't seen an admonishment from Congress saying to the president, this is not the way to do things. You know that. But you disregard Congress, you disregard procedure, both domestically and in international arenas, where people are expecting a leading nation like the United States to behave differently. This is not it. So now it is perfectly feasible. In fact, it is imperative that the people of the United States know or learn what exactly is the relationship between Saudi Arabia and the United States that makes the president comfortable in threatening war and in utilizing U.S. troops and equipment to go to defend another country on the basis of something that has not yet been proven. How does it happen? Why do we allow it? Do we not understand that that could possibly put on alert, and I'm sure it has, all the other countries who are looking at the conduct of the United States and are saying among themselves, we better get ready. We better do whatever it is we have to do to get ready to defend ourselves, because we have a renegade government. Actually, two. Saudi Arabia admits it doesn't know. They don't know whether it was cruise missiles that were used. They don't know whether it was, their drones. They don't know whether it was a combination. They don't know where the platform was from which the weapons were launched. They don't know whatever it is they needed to know conclusively. They are admitting, even to this day, they have no definitive answers. But we have a president who has already committed to war to protect Saudi Arabia. Now, for us as Americans, we have to now ask a different set of questions. Show us or tell us about this arrangement that the United States has with Saudi Arabia that binds the United States to this kind of action immediately. They don't have to go to Congress. Trump doesn't have to make the case before any entity here. And yet he's committing the resources, the equipment, and above all, the lives of American soldiers to go defend Saudi Arabia. In the middle of not knowing all the things that we need to know, and all the things that need to be discussed, and the clarity that we need to have about why this president thinks this is the way to go. And he's a one-man band. He owns the country. He owns the military assets of this country. And he owns the soldiers of the country. He owns everything. And he can do what he wants, when he wants to do it. And nobody should ask him any questions or demand accountability from the president. Now, quiet as it's kept, there are countries in the world which do not have a warm and loving relationship with the United States, and vice versa, who have already interpreted the president's actions and his words literally as a declaration of war. They are getting ready. The president has not considered the very real possibility, and I can assure you this has happened already. People coalescing, overcoming whatever historic barriers they had between and among them, and consolidating their efforts, which is contrary, if people have been following diplomatic efforts with this part of the world. You don't want that. You don't want to encourage amalgamation of power that will absolutely be against you. You want to be seen as logical, level-headed people who are taking action only after they have gone through acceptable, in fact, mandated steps. You can't just wake up in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to attack Yemen, or I'm going to attack Libya. But this president is predisposed to thinking this way, and worse, behaving this way. Now, are we able to take a break? Let's see. Yes. Let's do this. We'll take our break now and we'll come back. Thank you. You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And your comments and questions about the issues we've raised today at 888-874-4888. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
Are we on the second topic or the first topic or both?
No, you can take your, you can speak at the first topic as well. It's open.
Okay. Well, the hearings yesterday, that was really, I encourage everyone. It's on C-SPAN, 5 hours long, but the best part was when the attorney hired by the House Judiciary Committee really honed in the last, I'd say the last, if you watch the last half an hour, I mean, the whole thing was interesting, but Lewandowski is so just disgusting. Only a white male could get away with responding with questions. You know, you're not supposed to question Congress when you're under oath. So that was very interesting. But when he had to admit that he lied to the press, it's just really enlightening about where his allegiances lie, Lewandowski's, and how much there is to protect. Because when you have to lie that hard, you're hiding something. Do you get my drift?
Well, what did you get from him personally as he sat down and kept everybody at bay? He managed to keep everybody at bay for such a long time with his non-answers and his snarky attitude. His attitude conveyed literally, I'm not afraid of you. You can't do anything to me. You can't trap me. And for a minute there, I felt, oh my gosh, I don't know that the questioning will work. And we saw that the two lawyers got their act together, went and reorganized themselves, and they had him.
And they had him. I was disappointed. I was disappointed in, you know, I'm a Democrat. I consider myself a Democrat. I'm disappointed because some of those folks are lawyers, and I don't think that they were as prepared as they could have been knowing this individual's history. They should have been much tougher with him. Now, Sheila Jackson Lee, she, I think that's her name.
Yes.
Okay. Now she got it right because you had to know that this guy is coming from law enforcement and his mentality and his mendaciousness and his contempt for anyone who questions the president. You know, he's almost like a cult type person when it comes to the mentally ill Donald Trump. So, you know, you have to come into it with that perspective. And that's what happened near the end. So, you know, we have, that's the microcosm. In the microcosm, Democrats have to play hardball if they intend to win. And that bleeds over into the general election. So it finally came together. And thank God they did have a seasoned attorney at the end who was able to ask the hard questions and make Lewandowski, make them answer your question. So I think he, you know, he doesn't care. He's entrenched. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. Because you know what? He knows he's going to get pardoned at the end of the day. He knows he'll be pardoned.
Well, I don't know if he should hold on to that hope either, because it may prove to be another legal effort that would show itself as being illegal. That the pardon itself is a reward for fulfilling the duty of hiding Trump from any possible legal action. So that already has its weak spots. He can't just believe that he could do that.
He shouldn't. I think he does, but I believe in what you just said, that it fits into that rubric where of this general contempt that the Trump, that this administration has for the contempt of the rule of law and obstructing justice. I mean, they have a clear and ongoing pattern of obstructing justice, absolutely, at any cost.
What do you think is now going to be, because evidently there was a schism within the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party's highest leadership. I'm talking about Nancy Pelosi and Gerald Nadler. What do you read as the relationship or the state of affairs with the party's leadership at this point?
Well, I think Nadler wants to get, you know, he wants to be able to seal his case against Trump and bring forth, and he's doing it right. I don't think they're working in concert. It'd be nice if they were.
It doesn't look like they're working in concert, and it is not because Nadler doesn't want to, but I think because Nancy Pelosi has been so headstrong about this point of not going after Trump on the basis of, moving him out of the White House this mm-hmm. way. She mm-hmm. was very explicit about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And she's very pragmatic, and she's good at counting votes. But I think she's worried about losing the power of the House. But I think that maybe she's so entrenched, maybe she should step back for a moment and look at how many GOP senators are stepping away from their posts. They're retiring. You know, mm-hmm. so now it's time for her to back up. But she needs to buck up, you know, and retool. If we could, and I don't know if you allow me, but I really would like to also delve into the Saudi thing, because I think it's a little more serious at this point.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, quickly, yeah, because, you know, to have a mentally ill fascist, white supremacist president engage us in this vitriol that leads to war is very dangerous. Now, there's some interesting things that I see. Number one, why? First of all, we cannot trust these people, number one. But why is Pompeo over in Saudi Arabia? And the president has already said, well, we have to see what direction we get from Saudi Arabia. He should be asking, what direction should we be getting from Congress? Let's do an investigation. Let's see if this is even real. If the Houthis had a drone, where did they get it from? Where, you know, weapons leave marks. It's like ballistics. You know, you can figure out who supplied the weapons. But why were there not any casualties? You know, why does the president defend the leader of the House of Saud at any cost? We know what happened with Khashoggi. The first thing he said, well, I don't know. You know, they do a lot of business with us. There's a lot of money on the line. So that was clear money over life at that point. And in this scenario, I haven't heard anything about any deaths. So did everyone get told?
No, there hasn't been a report about deaths nor about the extent of damage. All I heard, or what I read, was that the Saudis expect to have repairs made and to have production running within a month.
Do you find that odd?
Well, you know, there are lots of things that are odd about this. I don't understand the subservience, at least, I mean, even as he says that, America is taking the lead here. You're right. That was a very important slip of the tongue that he's waiting, Trump is, to find out what the Saudis want to do. And yet he said he's locked and loaded. So the way I read it was that Trump has placed at the behest of Saudi Arabia the United States Armed Forces. It's like a lend-lease program. If you want to fight a war, even if it is to defend yourself, we could find ways to rent out our army, our navy, our air force, our soldiers. We could make that all available to you as a package. In return, let me build my hotels in your country and in throughout the kingdom. Give me preferential treatment there. I don't know what the agreement is, but this is most unusual. I've never seen the United States behave in such a subservient manner while trying to convince people that it is taking a leadership role. This is not a leadership role.
No.
The United States is doing the grunt work here. And, you know, wherever Trump is, every time he does something like this, money is at the top of the list. Making money.
Making money. That is his prime motivator. And we have to just stop. And he's not a normal. Once again, his full name is the mentally ill Donald Trump. And we have to look at the only thing that motivates him is money and what he perceives to be his prestige. I just can't get over the Khashoggi thing. He made it very clear. Well, we can't do anything because I don't care what the evidence is. No, they do a lot of, they've got big contracts. They're making a lot of money for me. I mean us. And they're paying cash.
It's a money thing. And now it buys the payer a lot more than just, well, if I need you to back me up, you know, to stave off these people trying to bob all of my oil fields and so forth, I appreciate that help. But it comes down to a lot more than that. Saudi Arabia has tons and tons and tons of money. It is able to influence the world market. That's power too. We saw that oil went up. It just went crazy. It increased prices. That's making money. That's making money. The president has shamed this country and his office. He's shamed it. He's made a mockery of it. And put it at, you know, he's put it in the market as you could rent the United States and its power. You can buy it. I will even help you steal it.
Wow.
If, you know, there's enough money on the table, I'll do that. And cover it up in a lot of American bunting and flags. And we'll fool the people. We'll have a lot of perhaps some more dances with golden swords to indicate that we're closing the gap in the world. But that's not what's going on here. Nobody's fooled with this nonsense.
Well, how come more of our fellow Americans are not questioning what clearly looks like a false flag type of event? But because, you know, it takes time to shut down an oil refinery. And you just don't. How do you have no, it's a 24/7 type of operation. Someone always has to be there. How do you have no casualties? Where are the casualties?
How is it that you have one of the most highly praised Air Force units in the region, and they couldn't scramble together a jet force to repel anybody who was involved. So thanks so much. We've come to the end of the program today. Let's meet up again tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening and participating.